I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
What's up, people? Good Monday afternoon. It is good to be with you.
We have so much to talk about. I don't even know where to start.
It's a wonderful late summer day here in Kansas City.
Boy, toasty warm. I was out watering the grass earlier.
Very late summer day.
Breezy.
I was telling you guys earlier, today would have been my parents' 58th wedding anniversary.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Did you call your mother?
I texted her immediately. We're having dinner tonight. And I don't say happy anniversary.
Obviously, to acknowledge the anniversary.
Right. I texted her this morning. I said, just wanted to let you know I'm thinking of you on your and dad's anniversary.
Yep.
And she wrote back, thank you very much. Wonderful memories. Two wonderful sons.
Oh.
So.
I booked my flights over the weekend to go see mom and dad.
Good.
I will be doing the show from Biloxi, like I normally do. You'll hear the train coming in the background.
When are you going?
First weekish of December. And you want to hear something funny? I, in my Facebook bank of memories that pop up on my phone from time to time, noticed last night during an outstanding weekend of watching sports.
Oh my God! Don't get me started.
We will go back to that. That. I was actually there seeing mom and dad that very week 1 year ago.
Huh.
So I don't know what it is. Like around the beginning of December, I get bitchy enough because it turns cold and I start missing mom and dad enough to the point that that's apparently my week because it was the exact week. I was like, well, look at that.
And it comes right after Thanksgiving.
Right after Thanksgiving and
family.
Oh my gosh. And Thanksgiving reminds me of football and football reminds me of this weekend. And the Chiefs are the only undefeated team in the league.
Still 2 weeks in a row.
Wow. 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 Still.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the real play over the weekend.
Well, there were several, Scott.
There's one that I can think of. Washington, Chicago.
The Hail Mary.
Okay.
The Chicago cornerback taunting the crowd.
The crowd in Washington.
Yep. Then it doinks off his head.
Well, but hang on. It gets worse. He's way down by the end zone. What's his name? Tyreek something or other. He's taunting the crowd in Washington like, we're about to whoop your butt.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah.
What, 12 seconds
Washington
left,
snaps the ball. Left. He's too busy talking trash.
Yep.
He doesn't even realize that the play has started. He goes running back into the end zone just in time to tip the ball into the air into the waiting hands of a Washington receiver.
It was a miraculous Hail Mary.
It was, but. Can I just say one but?
There is no butt on this
play. The doink off the helmet did place that ball.
Wait, it was on his hands.
Hand.
Directly into the hands of the player that ended up catching it.
He deflected it.
Yes.
And then, you know,
it was incredible. I'm not saying it wasn't, but like I remember one of the commentators, like the athleticism, and I go, nope, that landed right in his hands.
Well, the quarterback, you know, hiked the ball and then proceeded to pull a couple of Mahomes's as he ran around.
Oh, he was scrambling for like 30 seconds.
And then finally able to just launch that ball from the 34-yard line?
By the way, I looked it up. On Hail Marys of 50 yards or more, this is how bored I get on a Sunday. Hail Marys of 50 yards or more, I believe 2% are successful.
It's very rare.
What were you saying, Sam?
Do you think he yelled out 500 as he let the ball go? Because it looked like a game of 500, and they came down on top.
Did you see the fans' reaction on both sides? I love watching that.
Yeah.
The other coach looked like he was going to have a heart attack. Just like, just happened? And then the winning coach was like, oh, my God, oh, my God.
Well, they stormed the field. Of course they did. I mean, it was, and we were watching it live. This wasn't like you saw it, during the halftime highlights or anything like that. We were watching it live.
It was the extended coverage after the Chiefs game was over.
Yeah, and I jumped off the couch.
Yeah.
I was like, no, I'm standing in front of the TV going, no way, no way.
The Chiefs are aiming for their third 7-0 start in franchise history. Or it would be eight?
Well, no, we're now 7-0.
We're now
we just got our third 7-0 start in franchise history.
If it would be 8, we'd have to look that up. Have they ever been 8-0?
I do believe so, yes.
Oh, man, I don't know, Dan.
I have no idea.
And you notice, too, we still don't get any love from the people on the national level. It's more like, yeah, they're rocking. They're off to a great start. I mean, still, if it was any other team, it would be like, can you believe?
Oh, if this was Aaron Rodgers and the Jets.
Oh, my gosh. You would never hear the end of it.
That is correct. That is correct.
Briefly, we have to talk about the most exciting end to any game in the history of sport. And that was the one we fell asleep and missed the walk-off grand slam.
Oh, you missed that?
With a lot of America that keeps saying, I don't care about L.A. and New York.
Oh, I love this World
what
Series.
What a great ending.
Yeah.
I have to eat my words because I said it would be boring and I watched the game Saturday night. And even that one wasn't nearly as exciting as the game Friday night. And it was still electric.
Someone put on Twitter, for all of y'all in America that said you didn't care at all about baseball because of these two teams, I hope you had fun caulking your windows in your master bedroom and you missed that game, which I thought was very funny. I missed it because I fell asleep, because that was in the 10th inning that happened, correct?
It was in extra innings, yes.
That player, who is now my favorite person of all time, runs around the bases, tags home. I don't know a thing about this guy. Again, I don't follow baseball in other cities, and I certainly don't follow World Series with other cities. He goes over through the net and hugs his dad.
Aw.
I have watched that video about 26,000 times, and I cry every time. And they asked him about his dad in the presser after.
Oh, let me look that up. I forgot to do that. Oh, my gosh, Dan.
And any little boy that ever played catch with your dad, I mean, he said this was not my moment. This was my father's moment.
Aww.
Oh, I don't even know who this guy is, and I'm crying.
His name is Freddie Freeman, and I saw a video of him on Facebook over the weekend, and he's walking through a neighborhood, and there's a kid for Halloween dressed as Freddie Freeman. And I'm sure the kid knew that Freddie Freeman lives in the neighborhood or whatever, but anyway, it was still sweet because he's walking past him, like the kid's coming across the street. Freddie Freeman's with his kid walking the opposite direction. And he goes, let me see the number on the back of your shirt. And the kid turns around. And he goes, you're going as Halloween as me.
Oh.
And the kid goes, I am. And he goes, let's get a picture. And so he took a picture. It was so sweet.
You know, he also announced, because again, deep dive, that a few months ago he was on emergency family leave. Sweet Freddie, because his son was diagnosed with a horrible autoimmune disorder. Is it Guillain-Barré syndrome? I always mispronounce that and I apologize. And I was watching that press conference and crying. I was watching him hugging his dad and crying. I mean,
Listen, we don't get into the weeds on sports on this show.
But that was magical.
But there are moments, you know, we don't break down the numbers or anything like that because, let's be honest, we don't know how. But there were moments over the weekend where I was like, I could watch 3 or 4 more games. This is so exciting.
By the way, the Chiefs have been 9-0 twice.
And 8-0 twice in 2013 and 2003. I just looked it up as well.
Yes, and they went 9-0 those seasons.
Twice. Ooh.
It could happen. And if it doesn't, it's fine. They're still the best team. And
keep in mind, football, though, we didn't win. I don't play.
Clearly.
They didn't win the Super Bowl in those years.
We would be remiss.
What was that supposed to mean? When I said I don't play, you go, clearly.
We would be remiss if we were talking baseball and did not bring up the fact that Salvador Perez, and thank you to our listeners, because I'm telling you, it is the first time in Royals history one of our players has brought home the Clemente Award, otherwise known as Robert. Roger.
Roberto.
Yes.
Roberto.
And I was with a couple this morning, and they said, oh my God, did you hear Salvi just won? We did reach out to the Royals. This is a huge, big deal. No Royals player ever has won this award. And you were saying, Scott, it's because of population, because it's a popularity vote. Mm-hmm. And so in big cities, you know, the award usually goes to someone who, like, is in New York or in California.
Go to Aaron Judge or Freddie Freeman.
You guys did this because we mentioned, please vote for Salvi, please vote for Salvi, about 1,000 times on this program. And I know others did as well. Mm-hmm. Y'all turned out, voted for Salvi. And Salvador Perez has become today the first Royals player to win the Roberto Clemente Award.
Roger Clemente.
For his work both on the field and, most importantly, what he does in this community off the field. It warms my heart. Congrats to Salvi. No, we cannot interview him. There is a freeze on all media interviews during the World Series.
Which is so stupid.
You should be able to talk about other baseball things if you're not. I understand we can't interview the GM of whatever team is playing in the World Series.
Why can't Salvador Perez do an interview with local media?
I agree. It has nothing to do with the World Series.
When he wins the Roberto Clemente Award.
They don't want to take any of the hype away from the World Series. All eyes on the big games.
So what the sports boys said was, give it, you know, a week or so, and then he will be
available. But it's old news.
Available. I still think it.
Or how about give out the awards after the World Series?
Bingo! So that we're not all sitting here going, hey, can we get Salvi?
I can't talk. I'm not allowed to talk.
Well, we're talking sports, but not sports. Did you guys see the statue that was unveiled over the weekend?
We'll get to that at 3 o'clock.
Okay.
Let's not ruin all the sports stories we've
right.
got.
All right.
Have you not seen this?
I did not take the bait and click on it, but
Do you remember when they unveiled the bust of Ronaldo?
Yes.
It's
worse.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Oh, I can't wait.
We thought that was the bottom of the boot.
Are they not vetting the sculpture tours at this point?
I mean, before you put it out on display, why not say, we're gonna send that one back.
At least like they walk out there and go, hey, anybody want to make a sculpture?
At least hold a picture up next to it.
Not mass produce this sucker.
913-586-7798. Sam Stevie III, Dana Wright. My name is Scott here on KMBZ. I was just telling Sam and Dana during the break, I was watching the clip again of that Hail Mary in Washington, and the receiver, I hadn't noticed this before, the receiver, when he catches what is obviously a game-winning touchdown, doesn't spike it, doesn't jump up and down, he just drops the ball and walks away.
You always say, act like you've been here
act
before.
Act like you've been in the end zone before.
Well, but the walk-off grand slam, I'm going to have to say this, my favorite thing that Freddie did, he knows that ball is gone.
Yeah.
The second it makes contact with the bat. And in fact, he is flinging that bat like a boss, what, 2 full seconds before the ball goes out. He just knew it.
Sure. Of course he did.
And he just opens his palm and drops the mic. It's so good. Nice. All right. We have so many things to talk about today. My weekend. Oh, my gosh. I forgot the topic this hour. Because I had so many things going on this weekend that I forgot about Friday night. And all I did was text Sam and Scott, please remind me on Monday, you break, you buy. Because we see this posted in stores all the time, especially inside of stores with nicer items, right? So I meet a couple of girlfriends on the plaza straight after work Friday night, 6:30. And it was a spot where you could take children. I wouldn't. It's more of a wine upscale kind of place. It doesn't say no children, but it's not the kind of place. You know, this wasn't Chuck E. Cheese. Okay.
Okay.
And it's also a space that has a little tiny retail store in the front of the space. So think candles, expensive bourbon glasses, wine glasses, everything is glass. To the point that when I was standing in line, I made sure my purse was close to my body because women, you know this, if you're holding a larger purse, you make one turn to the right or the left, that thing knocks into everything.
You're
right?
At $300.
And I remember looking down and thinking, yep, I am keeping my purse right here. Okay. So my girlfriend show up, we're there about 30 minutes and a couple was leaving and had chosen to dine with their, let's say, 4-year-old and 6-year-old. And one of the children was very curious on the way out about some of the high-end candles that they have in the front of this establishment. And we just hear this, boo!
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. And we look over, and my first thought was, oh, man. I'm holding my purse close to my body because I don't want to bump into anything that I end up having to buy. I cannot imagine how tight you would have to hold onto a toddler.
So how much was broken?
Everything was at eye level for a child. Everything's at eye level. Everything.
How much stuff is laying on the floor?
It was a loud crash. We turn, and by the it was just a lot of glass. That's all I know, Scott. And we have all been there as either children or someone with children. Don't touch, don't touch, don't touch, don't touch. But, like, kids are going to do what kids are going to do. When was the last time you had a break it or buy it scenario? And then I was asking my girlfriends this. Is that some legally binding rule in a store or in a restaurant where you are actually on the hook for you break it, you buy it? And one of the first things I'm thinking of is like art. When you go into a glass blown art store, I don't mean like at the Nelson, but if you go into a nice art store, can they legally tell you if you're not paying attention or keeping an eye on your children and something breaks and falls to the ground, you are going to own the 10,000 pieces that just shattered into?
It is not legally binding.
Then why does every store post, you break, you buy?
It says here, the you break it, you buy it rule might have been around for nearly a century, but it is not legally binding. A store owner can sue you for compensation over a destroyed or damaged product. However, they may not and cannot detain you and force you to pay on the spot.
I think it's just a mitigation strategy similar to the gravel trucks that say, stay back 100 feet.
Not we responsible are not responsible for accident. For any damage. Yeah, the hell
yes,
you're not.
You are. Yes,
right?
You are.
Do you remember as a child ever breaking anything and just the, and I felt bad. I really did. My first thought was, what are you doing with kids in here? But the second thought was, you never want to be the parent whose kid everyone turns to look and,
sure, of course.
You know, that kind of thing. But, and then the child's crying and you feel sort of bad.
Well, that would happen even if you broke something. I mean, people are going to turn and look to see because, you know, it's such a jarring sound. And quite frankly, the curiosity of what did you
who
break?
Who did it? What'd you do?
What'd you break?
What's the retail on that thing?
Right. No, I would not. I probably wouldn't be found dead in a place like that. And I certainly wouldn't take kids.
If it were me, I would offer to pay for it. I would feel so bad. I would just say, please let me pay for this. I would check the price first.
Yeah. I was going to say.
What if you're the family of the kid who
$12,000.
Knocked over the 3,000-year-old vase in the museum somewhere
overseas?
It was overseas.
A couple years ago in Overland Park.
Do you offer to pay for that one? Because
no.
We're talking millions
point. You can't afford it.
Yeah.
And by the way, that museum did put that vase back together.
They glued it back together.
And
Gorilla glue for the win.
Yes. And they said, we're going to use this as a teaching moment, a phrase I hate, but we're going to use it as a teaching moment to remind people this is what happens to antiquities when
we don't store them properly away from someone putting their mitts on them. I'm telling you, Scott, remember the case in Overland Park where in the foyer of either City Hall, it was the community center. It was the Matt Ross Community Center.
Yep.
There was some expensive glass piece that was up on a very shaky pedestal, and kids are roaming around in the lobby. I swear it was Matt Ross. Matt Ross is where you take kids. You would expect to see children there.
I think you're right.
And I took the side of the family on that one because I think Overland Park said to the family, we want you to pay for that. And the family said, absolutely not. And because of the way that it was displayed in that case, because of the location, a community center where you know there are going to be children running in and out, right. I thought it was ridiculous that they placed something so valuable. Wasn't it like $16,000?
Everything you're saying is starting to ring a bell.
And it was a little boy just comes running on through, bumps into the pedestal, bam, down it goes.
I mean, you've got a pool in there. And
I was like, why would they put that in the lobby of the Matt Ross Center? So no, I don't think they should have paid for that. In this case, a couple candles, I think you offer to pay for it.
I will say with the candles or any other retail setting where they have the you break it, you buy it rule, they have insurance on all of those goods. They have loss prevention insurance, similar to theft, where if something breaks, they can get it replaced through that insurance policy. If they make you pay for it and then they claim that on their insurance.
Are you double dipping there?
That is a 5-letter F word we call fraud.
By the way, the city of Overland Park was repaid. It was in 2018.
I know, I remember.
It was a $132,000 sculpture that was on sale.
Yep.
A 5-year-old broke it. The city did get a check for $107,000.
From whom?
From the boy's family's insurance company.
Oh. See, I'm not even okay with that. Can you, your insurance company would drop you like a hot rock.
What insurance company covers that?
I guarantee you they had an umbrella policy. I guarantee it.
Like, I have an umbrella policy with USAA. Would they pay for that?
It covers ridiculous things like that when you are sued.
The destructive toddler policy?
Yep.
Yeah, it was the sculpture was $132,000. The city of Overland Park got $107,000. And that was the check reimbursed the city for all but the $25,000 deductible in the city's insurance policy. Huh. The boy's mother, Sarah Goodman, said Saturday, this is back in 2018, 6 years ago, she had known nothing about her insurance company payment, and she wondered whether there was a thorough investigation to validate the value of the artwork. Well, she says she wasn't told anything.
Artwork, as you know, when one duct tapes a banana to the wall.
$1.5 million, please.
Can be what anyone chooses to claim it is valued.
The value is in the eye of the beholder?
Yeah.
The art piece was entitled Aphrodite of Kansas City. This is what it looked like.
And now there's 10,000 of them, and you can own a piece of it.
913-586-7798.
For 20 bucks.
586-7798. Dana Wright, Sam Stephen. My name is Scott. Don't forget to check out the Dana Parks podcast, available anytime you want, anywhere you go. Just go to kmbz.com.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Story here from the USA Today. A Kentucky man who was pronounced brain dead and prepared for organ donation woke up before he was set to undergo the procedure, and the incident has sparked an investigation and led several people to quit their jobs. Anthony Hoover, goes by the nickname TJ, he's 36 years old, woke up multiple times before he was scheduled to donate his organs in October of 2021 in Richmond, Kentucky. Nicoletta Martin, an organ preservationist with the Kentucky Organ Donor Affiliates, quit her job over the incident. She spoke with USA Today. It was a big mess.
That's the quote?
During his honor walk, a ceremony of respect where people gather in the halls of the hospital as a donor is moved to the room where the recovery surgery begins, he woke up and began tracking his family members with his eyes.
Oh, God.
When his family noticed, they were told it was a normal reflex.
Oh.
Don't worry. He's dead. Don't worry.
His sister Donna, quote, knew something was wrong because he was looking right at me. The organ procedure was called off. Hoover survived.
You think?
Though he suffers from brain damage and has minimal short-term memory. He's able to walk. He's able to feed himself. He talks if you ask him questions. He just can't remember a lot. So you can't really hold a conversation with him, but he is there.
Now, wait a minute. If you read later in the USA Today story here, Hoover is said to have woken up hours before the organ donation procedure was to take place, while a cardiac catheterization was being performed to test if his heart was healthy enough to be donated. At that point, during that test, the family says, he woke up in response to the pain during the cardiac tap.
I bet he did.
When you go through the arteries, it's really painful. After he woke up, he was sedated. That test was done at 9 a.m., Scott. The honor walk was at 4 p.m. And no one told the family during the cardiac catheterization procedure that he had woken up.
Two doctors were present when Hoover began to show signs of life before the procedure in the afternoon and refused to proceed. They both, this is quoting here from his sister again, they both said absolutely not and just walked out.
It is remarkable how we, and I say we, obviously we're not doctors, but the medical community has decided on what, quote, brain death is when, it, by all accounts, the brain is the one part of the human body that they cannot wrap their heads around, for
Once
lack of a better term.
Once the two doctors walked out, the family said, we expected at that point they would say, okay, let's take him back to ICU and cancel the case. Instead, quoting here from his sister, they pressured the woman who quit. They pressured her, go find another surgeon to, you know, finish the case or you will be fired. That coordinator quit the same day.
Said she had PTSD.
I'm sure.
It is important to understand that CODA, now is that the organ procurement
Yes.
organization?
Yes.
Quote, had multiple opportunities to do the right thing.
Kentucky Organ Donor Affiliates. Oh, CODA.
God.
Now, I will tell you this, you know, I have heard, it has not been my experience, I have heard that some of these organ donation, and this is not a dig against organ donation. I strongly believe in it.
You went through it, Scott, with your father.
With my dad, that's right. And that's what I'm going to touch on that in just a second. But I have heard from other people that these organ donation groups, companies, whatever they are, can be aggressive.
Time is of the essence.
Right. We need organs.
Once someone is dead.
Someone in your family has organs, we need them badly. Now, we went through, I believe it was the Midwest Organ Donation Group or whatever the official title is. They were very sensitive. They were very kind. But, you know, when you're going through the worst day of your life, and then in walks this group. And my dad had never thought about organ donation. He was 53 years old. We never even talked about it. So this was a decision that the family had to make. And my dad was clinically brain dead. And before we had to make the hardest decision we ever did, which was to take him off life support, they brought in someone from the organ donation group.
Here's my guess. They have this Kentucky man. You know, they're wheeling him through the hallways because they've found another surgeon who's in the dark about what has happened here. There's no way any surgeon is going to go, oh, he's still alive. Yeah, let me take out his heart and lungs.
Right.
They found a surgeon in the dark, apparently, to do this as they are wheeling this poor man, semi-conscious, through the hallway.
After two doctors realized he's alive, I'm out.
We're out. Yeah. Okay? At that point, the doctor should have called 911, if you ask me. Are they not attempting to kill a man? Think about it.
Yeah.
You know he's alive. The organ donation people, you know he's alive, and you are wheeling him in there to take those organs out because you think the family doesn't know.
That's why the idea of brain death has become so controversial, because he has been deemed clinically dead because he is brain dead. However, his body is still very much alive. They unplugged him. They're wheeling him down the hallway. He's not plugged into anything, breathing on his own.
And he wakes up.
But I don't think he was ever brain dead in this case, Sam. For him to wake up during the catheterization process and then again in the hallway and he's tracking with his eyes, I recognize my sister. I don't think that's brain death. Here's what I almost guarantee you happened. There was a recipient waiting for those organs.
Maybe.
Already scrubbed in and waiting. You know, it's not like you take the organ out and you get to wait a week and schedule that. I mean, we've known people on the organ donation list. Yeah, they walk around with a pager.
Yep.
Time is of the essence when you get those organs out to get them back in. And I bet you they rolled the dice at this transplant organization and thought, let's get him under, let's get those organs out, because patient B is waiting to have those organs transplanted. We've already told that family, we have an organ for you.
Now, does the organ donation group, I don't want to call them a company,
no, here it's Midwest Transplant Network.
Yeah, and that's who we went with.
Yep.
With my dad, and again, they were great, but it is tough when they come into the room and dad's still on a ventilator, and they want to talk about, you know, he's going to die here real soon. We need his organs, and we made that decision, and it was tough. Well, it wasn't tough, but it was
the right decision for your family.
The decision wasn't tough; just going through it was tough.
Sure,
if that makes sense. And is there money in it for them?
No. No.
They don't get paid?
Well, it isn't free per se, but it's not a profit Thank God. Can you imagine the fraud then? We'd be declaring people dead left and right if there was profit to be made in that.
Then why would this group in Kentucky be so aggressive?
Because another patient was waiting for that, quote, life-saving donation, promised, you know, corneas and kidneys and heart and all of those things. And my guess is, Scott, if people would just sign up to donate, we wouldn't be in the situation we're in. You know, in Europe, you are assumed to donate and you have to opt out. In the United States, you're assumed to not donate and you have to opt in.
That's true. And it's on your driver's license.
Thousands of people die on that waiting list every single year because of that.
913-586-7798, 586-7798. Derek in Kansas City. Derek, hello.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to give my experience. About a year ago, my mom suffered sudden cardiac arrest. This is out in California. I got out there later on that same day, and she was declared brain dead. So it's tough because then you have to go through the process of taking off life support. Well, I said, okay, so when are you going to take her off life support? They said, well, you need to answer your phone first and talk to the organ donation company. And I said, well, I couldn't find her driver's license, so I didn't know.
Yeah.
And that's probably both of our fault that we didn't know what she wanted. So I just told them, I said, based on my mom's life experience, some things she had gone through, I don't want her organs to be donated. I just want to sit here with her while she passes. And they said, well, you still have to talk to the organ donation company. We will not take her off life support until you talk to them. So I answer the phone, and they proceeded to say, so you're telling me you don't want to save people's lives? And I was just... I was stunned because, you know, you're already in shock. You're losing your parent.
Yeah.
And then to have that kind of pressure put on, it didn't feel right.
And Derek, I'm sorry you had that experience because I know so many people who've had a positive experience during the worst moment of your family's
life.
Well,
mine was not negative.
But it was not just a negative experience.
Yeah, it was hard.
But again, I go back to this. If everyone would just not only sign the driver's license, it's more than that. Sign up on the Donate Kansas or Donate Missouri website and then tell someone in your family.
913-586-7798. Dana Wright, Sam Stevie. My name is Scott Parks here on KMBZ.
Stick around in the 3 o'clock hour. I'm so excited about this. We have talked over the years about the Sour Castle, famous, once aging, crumbling Sour Castle in Kansas City, Kansas, for years on this program, Scott. And you know it was falling into disrepair. The tower was going to collapse. Over the years, people said it was haunted and vagrants and ne'er-do-wells were roaming inside and out, vandals trying to get a peek out of it. So it turns out someone has purchased that historic landmark in hopes of saving it. Local like architecture firms in on this, the owner, obviously. And then we get this email from a historian that says she is in the process of helping with two students, high school students, help with some of the project. And we're going to have them in at 3 o'clock. And
nice.
I'm just so happy they're saving it. And if you haven't seen Sour Castle, just Google it when you get home. We'll talk about it all in the 3 o'clock hour. It is my dream home.
Oh my God. S-A-U-E-R
Castle. Yes. It looks like the Mop and Tour home in Lawrence to me on a grander scale. It is just absolutely stunning. They are saving it.
We'll talk to them at 3 o'clock.
We'll ask them when they get in here. I mean, it's on the historical landmark registry, I believe. So it has to be done a certain way and a right way to preserve its history. We'll talk about that at 3 o'clock.
A story here from Reuters. A new lawsuit accuses Subway of grossly misleading customers by advertising sandwiches that contain at least three times as much meat as it actually delivers.
This is long overdue.
Is it foot-long overdue?
It is. It is.
According to a proposed class action filed on Monday in federal court in Brooklyn, Subway ads for its steak and cheese sandwich show meat bursting from within, reaching about as high as the surrounding bread. But in reality, according to several photos in the complaint, Subway sandwiches are far more bread than they are filling. The complaint says this is especially concerning because of inflation and high food prices, and because many lower-income consumers are struggling financially. Why do you say this is long overdue, Sam?
So I've been a Subway fan for a very long time. It was my go-to meal in high school. It was my go-to meal in college. It was cheap. To get a sandwich that looks similar to the advertisement, you have to get double meat. That is
right.
Double the price.
You know, Sam, there is an entire industry of food photographers.
Oh, I'm fully aware. I know all the tips and tricks.
Do nothing but photograph fake food to make it look, you know. Did you notice over the weekend during football, McDonald's kept advertising the Big Mac? Despite the fact
don't
that
advertise the quarter pounder.
Beef has been deemed safe in the quarter pounder. Come in now and get a Big Mac. And all of that's fake. When you look at that photo of the Big Mac or anything else in those ads, it's fake.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever gotten like a Whopper and there was just glistening water on the tomato.
A little bit of sauce barely peeking out in the perfect corner.
Just a touch.
But legally, if you go in and you want to put your foot down, you can argue with the person who's probably making minimum wage behind the counter or slightly above it and say, this does not look like the product that you advertise. And legally,
none of it looks like that.
They have to provide you a product as advertised. Now you're going to ruin that person's day and they're going to think that you're the biggest jerk in the world.
And you're probably going to get some spit in your sandwich.
Well, you know, the extra shine.
Anna Tollison, by the way, of Queens, New York, said she paid $7.61 for a steak and cheese sandwich at a local Subway, not realizing that the fast food chain's ads showed the sandwich contained at least 200% more meat than she and other customers would receive.
And by the way,
she is seeking unspecified damages.
It's very obvious, too, because they count how many slices of meat they put on your sandwich. And in the advertisement, you can count how many slices of meat are on the sandwich. And it's not even close.
Okay. But do we not all know that there are shades of false advertising? And for someone to think that what you see in the picture with the like the Big Mac that looks like it's the size of a Volkswagen,
right?
That because of the angle from which it is shot, that you're really not going to get a sandwich that looks like that.
And by the way, speaking of deceptive advertising, can I sue an automaker because I just bought this car that I saw on TV, and yet strangely, I'm not able to drive it down abandoned large city streets? At high rates of
speed? Well, no, you didn't buy the experience. You bought the vehicle.
And the vehicle does say in small print, shown fully loaded. Fully loaded.
True. And it also says, do not attempt a professional driver behind wheel.
That massive Big Mac that you see on the commercial has something in the bottom right bottom right corner of the screen that says not the actual size of the product.
Okay, thank you.
Does it really?
It does.
Yeah, because some ding-a-ling suit at some point, so I thought it was going to come out and be the size of a Frisbee.
There was a guy in the early days of YouTube who made his living. He was a lawyer. He made his living off of going to fast food restaurants and saying, this Big Mac does not look like the Big Mac on the sign right there. I would like my Big Mac to look like that.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to take that Big Mac in the back for a minute. And you're going to get a little extra.
Excuse me, ma'am. My beef isn't glistening. Why is this not glistening?
Now, they got away with it when it was $5 footlongs, but now you're looking at, I don't even know. I haven't been in so long, but.
She said it was $7.61.
That's not a $5 footlong.
Okay. TGI Fridays abruptly shuttered nearly 50 locations in the United States over the past week, bringing the company's total to approximately 100 restaurant closures so far this year as the company reportedly approaches a bankruptcy. The 59-year-old Burger and Wings chain, which had 270 locations in the U.S. at the start of this year, has now shrunk its footprint to 213 open locations.
Ooh.
TGI Fridays did not immediately respond to requests for comment. They're in big trouble.
I have never once come to the end of a very busy work week at the end of Festivus Friday and thought, I would really like to go to TGI Fridays. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying, like, their entire name is built off the fact that, like,
that's where you
at
go
the
on
end of a long week, that's where you go. Right. And I don't know that most people would agree with that.
Well, and now if you wanted to go, you would have to drive all the way to Columbia, Missouri.
Yeah. They don't have any here in town anymore.
Yes.
No. Quick break for the news. Dan Weinbaum has that coming your way in 2 minutes. Dana Wright, Sam Stevie. My name is Scott Parks on KMBZ.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser-told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.